The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
We got a great show lined up for you tonight. We're going to be talking with Bill Donahue about demons and their place in the human world. Now, Bill is an author. He's written books, including a new one called Burn, Beautiful Soul. We'll talk to him all about his position and his ideas about demons, his personal experiences, plus his books. And we'll have a great time doing it as we learn more about demons tonight. Tomorrow night, we've got Cleet Keith here to talk about the ghosts of Greystone. He's written a book about a notoriously haunted place. And we'll talk about it tomorrow night with him. And then Thursday, Kitsy Duncan, who hosts a program called The Oddity Files, will be with us to talk about that program and her experience as well. Friday, most likely a Booze, Brews, and Bros. Looking forward to this. I need to talk a little bit about this monolith in Utah. Has anybody been following this story? It just appeared as if by magic. It was a 10-foot tall stainless steel structure, 10 feet tall, in a very secluded spot in the Utah desert. It was noticed at first by some pilots. They went down, they checked it out, and they determined they couldn't figure out where the heck this thing came from. And of course, alien enthusiasts and UFO enthusiasts started to come up with theories. And then, just as mysteriously as it appeared, it disappeared a few nights ago. Just vanished. Well, it turns out it did not just vanish. There is a photographer that came forward that was at the monolith about, it was about 9 p.m., a couple nights ago, whatever night it was that it disappeared. And he told the story of what he saw and included pictures. Four men pulled up, jumped off of ATV, said, "This thing is litter. It's got to go," basically. Pushed it over, took it down, dismantled it, threw it onto the beds of their ATVs and took off. And then later they tried to contact the photographer and ask him for the photographs. Now, these guys are saying that it was public land, that thing didn't belong there. I happen to think these are the guys that put it there, and there was no, you know, they weren't doing this out of some kind of service to public duty because they felt it was litter and it was marring the beautiful landscape of the Utah desert. I think they put it there and they got caught taking it out. But either way, it was a fascinating story, and what makes it even more interesting is that in Romania, of all places, another one of these very strange monoliths has just suddenly appeared. Now, these are either copycat monolith erectors, or they are, there's some kind of coordinated effort here. I don't know. It's an interesting story nonetheless, and we'll continue to take a look at it and see what we find out. I just need you to subscribe. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube and on Twitch. Both channels can be found by searching for JV Johnson. I want to say something, and this will probably work against me in some fashion. But most of you have heard me talk lightly about politics. And, you know, I touch on some of these topics because I believe it's important that we have these discussions. But I try to refrain from any real political discussions on the on this program. But one thing that has happened here on YouTube is that once, and I can only attribute it to the fact that, well, one of two things. Let me say this. It's either been because I have brought politics into a few of the discussions, or it has been because we've had people on the program that have had contrary views to what the public orthodoxy is, particularly when it comes to the pandemic, right? We've had people on the show that have talked about errors in the ways of some of this public policy, which I think, again, is great discussion. We need to have these conversations. But whatever it is, whether it's my political discussions or references, or it is the guests that we've had, a few of them, something has happened on YouTube where they have throttled the reach of the program significantly. We used to get about 150 new subscribers a month. That's how many people would come into the subscriber numbers. That number for the last 28 days is 2 people. Now, 2 people, you know, I could see a drop off, you know, that could happen. But for it to be go from about 150 average to 2 tells me that we've been somehow shadow banned or throttled or something by YouTube because of one of those two things that I mentioned. Now, saying this tonight probably will add to that. But at this point, I don't really care because this is absolutely ridiculous. This censorship, this effort to stifle legitimate conversations is absolutely unacceptable. And I think people need to start letting their feelings known. I think people need to either start looking for an alternative source, and I have been looking for an alternative source to broadcast and host videos on, or people need to, and I'll say both, and people need to start letting YouTube know in whatever way possible that it's unacceptable. I don't care if you agree with the position or not. I don't care if you think that somebody we have on this program is crazy because of their opinion. I don't care. The fact is they have the right to say it. We have the right to talk about it, and we have the right to let other people who want to hear it, hear it. So these, we've been talking about seeing some very dangerous trends in American society as it relates to what big tech is doing in their effort to stifle dissenting opinions, stifle conversations. And it's not healthy. It's not healthy for anyone. So be aware of it. Be thinking about it. But that's not the topic of our conversation. As I said, we're going to be talking with Bill Donahue tonight. He's a writer. He's written a book called Burn, Beautiful Soul. We're going to be talking about demons and their place in the human world tonight. That's Beyond Reality, and we will be right back.
Did you know that online retailers like Amazon have constant deals that can save you money on the things you buy every day? It's no joke. Save 40%, 50%, even 80% on great products, and all you have to do is know about them. Noodle Shark is the way to be alerted when something good is coming your way. Noodle Shark is the social media page that lists great deals that not only save you money, but give you the deals before anyone else has them. All you have to do is find Noodle Shark on Facebook. Search it as The Noodle Shark. That's The Noodle Shark, because you deserve to save too. Become a shark and save.
Thank you. Boy, just more technical oddities going on tonight. Not sure why all this stuff starts to happen at the same time. It seems as though all these individual pieces of technology somehow communicate with each other. And I'm not even talking about computers. I'm talking about my mixing board versus my workstation computer versus the stream computer versus my microphone versus the microphone processor. It's like, I don't know if you get if a power surge comes through and it makes everything a little funky, or if they're actually secretly conspiring against me, which my paranoid self might start to think. But we're not going to be paranoid tonight. We're going to have a great conversation. Looking forward to this one. Bill Donahue is our guest tonight. Bill is an author. He's a writer. We're going to be talking about demons. His new book just out recently is called Burn, Beautiful Soul. Bill, welcome to Beyond Reality. It's such an honor to have you on tonight.
JB, a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You noticed that thing I just said? Where, like, technology, like, it's not just one thing that goes weird on a given night. It's like seven things go weird on a given night. And these can be seven unrelated pieces of equipment, but it's just like these gremlins get into things. And they, like, say, okay, ready? One, two, three, go. And then everything messes up.
It's the gremlins. I think you're absolutely onto it.
So let's talk a little bit about you. I was reading up on, some of your history, your experiences here. You've done a lot of pretty interesting things that really don't have anything to do specifically with writing, but are kind of curious unto themselves. And I won't even point them all out, but one of the things that really stuck out to me is, what's this horror punk icon stuff? That sounds really cool to me.
Sure. Yeah. So when I was growing up, like a lot of people, I had some stupid ideas about what I wanted to do when I grew up, and none of them were realistic in any way, shape, or form. So I was in a band for about 5 or 6 years. We played a lot of shows, mostly on the East Coast, and I grew up loving the Misfits and stuff like that. So, our first show, we all dressed up in our doom makeup, and I always wanted to be Glenn Danzig in a way. Didn't work out that way, but the band is actually, that was 30 years ago when we started that. The band is still alive and kicking today, just one of the same members. But yeah, so that was always something I wanted to do. I thought I would be a musician my whole life. Didn't work out that way, but that was the dream.
Yeah, I had that same dream through college. I was in a college band. We, got some praise here and there. Decided to write some music and try to make a go of it after college. And it took me about six months to realize that as much as I loved playing, I didn't want it to be something that I had to starve for.
Gotcha.
And I decided to get into some other work. But anyway, I feel that passion. I understand what you're saying. So how do these experiences come together throughout the course of your life? That, I'm trying to remember some of the other things on that list, but they were pretty cool things. Something to do with a hockey team and some other things. How does that all come together to make you, at some point, decide you're going to start writing and being a writer?
Great question. So yeah, on that list too, at first I thought I was going to be a Catholic priest.
Oh, wow.
For some reason. So I think just growing up in a community, there was just one priest in our community. He was very cool, and I liked the idea of someone being that close and connected and just someone very respected. And like I said, I was not realistic at all in what I wanted to do with my life. At first I thought I'd be a professional wrestler, then a hockey player, and you said the horror punk icon as well. So those were things that I tried in some way, shape, or form. I was probably most successful with the musician end of things, but that was a long time ago. So I had grand expectations for what I wanted to do. Thought I'd be driving, I would be a ninja and driving a Lamborghini by
That's
now.
That's right, the ninja, that, yeah.
That, of course, hasn't lined up either, but, you know, you can't blame me for trying, right?
No, in fact, I think, and I hesitate to put it this way, but I think you'll understand my meaning. It's these dead ends in life that teach us so much and help us ultimately find the path to success or to the path to fulfillment in some way or another. If without those other dead ends in our lives, these, you know, those kind of roadblocks that we hit, we wouldn't turn around and find that other direction.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, and I think it's it probably has something to do with imagination, I assume. I imagine myself doing these crazy, stupid things, and that helped in fiction in some way, shape, or form.
Well, that's the other part of this. Each one of those things gives you a broader depth in your experience in life and understanding of the world around us. And I imagine that has to help you, particularly when you're writing fiction.
Sure thing.
So,
yeah, it's helped.
Yeah, before we get into talking about demons, we're going to get back to talking about the book, but I want to start just by getting a sense of what Burn Beautiful Soul is. Now, it was recently released, right? It's only been out for a little while.
Yeah, November 16th, so just a few weeks old at this point.
So give us a brief description about what we're talking about here.
Sure thing. Again, like you said, it's a novel. It's about, I guess we'll call him a demon king, and he lives in a place that most of us would think of as hell. Fire everywhere, kind of a monstrous creature in every shadow, this really terrible world with no mercy, just lots of bad things. So his name is Basil. That's the main character. He's the demon king. And he's as a demon king, he's done terrible things. He's let terrible things kind of happen in his name. But he kind of hates the things that he's done and hates where he lives, so he wants something else, and he believes he belongs someplace else, so he goes and looks for it, and he finds it by basically ascending to the surface and living among humans as a demon.
A lot of people use the word demon differently. I think there's probably a lot of definitions to that word. How is your use of the word demon here in describing this story that you have written? How are you positioning the word demon? What is a demon in this book?
So I'll start by you're exactly right. So most of us really think of demons, I think, as these non-corporeal entities that you can't really see or touch, and that's an absolutely terrifying thing. For this demon, for Basil and the race of people that he leads, they are very much flesh and blood, cold blood for that matter. So he's 8 foot tall, coal black reptilian skin, massive horns, cloven hooves, the whole getup. So he's a physical being. He's not quite immortal, so he's different, I think, than what you would see from like a Pazuzu in The Exorcist or something like that.
Now, I'm looking at the cover of the book, and I see a demon figure there. It's kind of an upside-down demon figure on the cover, but is that kind of representative of what we're talking about?
Yes.
You know, as we've talked about demons on this program many, many times, mostly in a paranormal sense, and a lot of times we have paranormal investigators that'll go into a haunted home or a reportedly haunted home. And on occasion, they'll say, oh, this is a demonic possession. But I'm not so sure they completely understand what that word is. But it ultimately boils down to them saying, well, it's an inhuman spirit These are things that never walk the earth. These are inhuman entities on the other side that are really there to drain your life's energy and for nothing but nefarious purposes. Is that your understanding of a demon?
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like for pretty much every culture has some definition of a demon or a demon-like character. So something like, you know, the jinn in Islam, or you know, the haints from the traditions right. of like the Gullah Geechee in the American South, or you know, for that matter, you know, Jesus confronting demons in the Bible. But yeah, you're right. It seems like it's always this thing that has never walked the earth, and it's either to cause pain or drain some kind of life force, or you know, if depending on your religious bent, to kind of keep you separated from God.
Well, and that's another important point you bring up. Is there necessarily a religious component to this when we talk about demons?
I think that depends on your belief system, and I guess it depends on whether or not you believe these things actually exist. I don't think that religion has to be part of that. Okay. I think if you look at the world, there's so much evil in the world, whether that comes from just humans themselves or there's some kind of you know, malevolent force behind that, who knows? But I think the religion thing is maybe something that we assign to it. You know, it's probably something that we'll never know until we die, or maybe not even after that.
So I look at your resume, your list of experiences, and I don't see Demon Hunter on there, right, per se. So how did you become interested in this particular topic? I mean, you don't necessarily wake up one day and say, hey, you know, I want to learn about and write about demons.
Right. So I have been alternately fascinated with and terrified by dark things since I was a kid. I'm in my late 40s now, and probably like a lot of people my age, I grew up watching horror films and listening to thrash metal and horror punk and stuff like that. I think that's where the seed took root. I think I'm still scarred by some of those early horror films. But it's something I've always had this really intense interest in, and again, in the same breath, always been kind of scared by. So I have always found myself drawn to, I'll call them kind of darker things.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I'm certainly not a demon hunter or a ghost hunter or anything like that, but where I live on the outskirts of Philadelphia, in Bucks County in particular, there's a lot of paranormal locations or locations that have had paranormal activity. So I grew up going to those places and just kind of being an observer and seeing what I can see. I'm still have an interest in it, but the opportunity doesn't arise all that often anymore.
So have you generally had an interest in the paranormal since childhood?
Yes. Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, when my parents, they drove us to Florida one year, and this is more along the lines of cryptids and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if you remember in the late 80s when there was the lizard man sighting in, I think it was South Carolina.
I do remember that, actually. Yeah, we've talked about it. Mm-hmm.
I was so excited to drive, just to look out the window the whole time, and I was sure that if I just kept my eyes peeled, that the lizard man would make himself known. Didn't happen, of course.
Yeah, I had a similar childhood too, and I am also very fascinated by your love of horror films. And one of the reasons I asked the question about horror punk career is because I'm a real horror movie fan, and I actually run a horror film convention, or did until this year, called Scaricon. So I've got my fingers deeply into the horror community. So I was curious if you had that interest in horror films, and it seems that you did, and I'm assuming you still do.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. This year, I guess, just things have been so weird that I find myself being drawn toward lighter things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm assuming that kind of once the world writes itself, that I'll be right back in it. But yeah, some of my favorite films of all time, and books for that matter, are the things that kind of scare the hell out of me.
And I hope you're right about things turning around, and I hope it happens rather soon, because we've had a long, tough year as this thing
sure
continued.
Thing.
Man. So with paranormal experiences yourself, have you had any, like, did you live in a haunted house? You say the area that you live in now is kind of known for having a lot of paranormal activity. Is that all Bigfoot sightings? I know that that area of Pennsylvania has had some of that, or is it ghostly stuff? What happens there?
Mostly ghostly stuff. Well, we have, you know, the Jersey Devil is right around the corner, so it is pretty big in this area. But Bucks County itself, it's this kind of this neat little enclave right on the Delaware River. And it's very much an artistic colony, but its paranormal goings-on date back to the Revolutionary War. So New Hope was very close to Washington Crossing, which is where, of course, Washington crossed the Delaware. And so when, after some of the battles, Washington's troops would camp out in New Hope, there's actually a building there called the Logan Inn. And it's kind of an open secret that the place is very much haunted. So his troops stayed there during the war. The basement was used as a morgue. And so anyone, if you sit down at the bar back when you still could sit down at the bar, and you would talk to, you know, the bartender or anyone who worked there, they have seen lots of stuff in that hotel. That's just that's one example. There's also New Hope. There's a very famous artist named Joseph Pickett, and his ghost has been sighted there many times. He's got an interesting backstory. He was a butcher and a carny and all this other weird stuff that you wouldn't associate with someone whose paintings now hang in some of the most prestigious art museums in the world. But lots of things like that. I can go on, but I can go on with the story if you like. But there's a ghost called the White Knight, which is probably my favorite from my area.
You know, tell the story. I find it fascinating.
So the White Knight, and there's a few different versions of the story, but there's a place called Holocong, which itself is a kind of a creepy name. So there's a place there called Gravity Hill where it's, you probably, I'm sure there are places like it around the country where kind of you park your car and kind of
rolls
whatever
uphill.
Force, exactly, drags you up the hill.
Yeah.
At the top of the hill is a church, and as of course, as a kid, you're told that this is a satanic church, and the gravestones face the wrong way, et cetera.
Right.
There is a gravestone in that cemetery surrounded by a cage. And the legend is that you go up to this caged gravestone and you say, "I challenge the White Knight." And when you say that, the White Knight is supposed to appear and you essentially race the White Knight out of the cemetery. So if you win, you get to live. If you don't, you're supposed to die within, say, 7 days. I think it's a really interesting legend, but the curious part is when I was in high school, it was my senior year, and there was a kid named Fred. I'll use his first name. And he was at a party, and, you know, they were doing things that kids do at parties and huffing butane and stuff like that. And he was, you know, they were like lighting it, like you'd like blow fire like a dragon.
Okay.
And it did not go well. He died. Ooh. And it was rumored that he had been to that cemetery the week before and challenged the White Knight and lost. So I don't know the validity of that, but that's what people have been saying for 25 years.
Bill, I love stories like that. Those are the most, those little local legends, you know, whether there's any truth to them at all is really irrelevant. It's the story and how it thrives in a community and a region. And then is told, like you just told us, you know, and the first time I've heard that story. So I love that stuff.
Yeah. 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 So I've had some, I've gone out and seen that kind of stuff. I've had some minor experiences in places where I didn't feel welcome, or I felt, I guess unwelcome is a good way of putting it. No haunted houses I've lived in, but certainly places where I've gone and haven't felt quite right.
Have you wanted to have that kind of experience? Some people actually really want to come face to face with a ghost, or maybe it's an alien, or maybe it's a Bigfoot. You know, are you put yourself in that camp?
I'd be okay with experiencing anything like that for like a one-time thing. My fear would be that something would come home. I've spoken to some people that you know, have had those kind of hauntings, or even, you know, demonic entities, they say, that have followed them, chased them, made their lives hell. So I'd be open to, you know, a one-time experience. I think I've had a few of those, but not something that I would want to linger, of course.
Let's talk about demons specifically, because that's the focus of your new book. But you know, there are people that swear that these beings are real, they exist, they're in the world, and you need to be careful, and you need to watch what you do, you need to not be vulnerable to them. And then there are others that'll say, oh, you know, this is another figment of your imagination. Where do you fall?
You know, it's a great question, and I probably would have given you a different answer a year ago. I was raised Catholic, I would say I'm agnostic now. I'm not really much of anything. And I wouldn't have said I'm superstitious, but doing the kind of the research that I did for this book and just kind of my own interest, I find that, like you said, I have an interest in this kind of stuff. I don't invoke it. I don't antagonize it. I don't do anything like that, that I think would, like you said, make myself vulnerable. So the logical part of me says, you know, there's nothing to worry about. But there's that kind of reptilian primitive part of me that says, be careful. Like tonight, I'll walk outside my basement door. I'll go into a darkened room, and I'll run up the stairs because of things that I imagine are lurking in the dark.
When it comes to demons and demonic activity, you know, there's a whole another level of threat there. I mean, seeing a ghost is one thing. You know, it may startle you, it may scare you. People would react differently. I know I would be startled. I look for them all the time. I've been a ghost hunter for a lot of years, and when you're looking for them, it's one thing. When you turn the corner and your deceased grandmother is standing there in front of you, as much as you'd want to see your deceased grandmother, it's startling. But when you start talking about demonic activity, you start to talk about intentions and motivations and what are they trying to do. And as we talked about earlier, it's generally not anything good. It's not positive. It's not constructive. It's all just the opposite of that. And so there's a whole different level of fear there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we talk about that. I mean, they call it a spiritual disease, a disease of the spirit, this theory that, you know, this thing is kind of an ailment that just really is just, like I said, it's going to take from you. Nothing good will come of it. I've seen some research suggesting that not all demons are bad or not all demons have bad intentions. I've seen some stuff that said demons are responsible for much of human culture or even religion, and that they've kind of shared their knowledge with humans through mating, like the incubus and the succubus. Merlin, he was the wizard from the Legend of King Arthur. Mm-hmm. He was said to be a Cambion, like a half demon, meaning he had a demon father and a human mother, and that's what made him as powerful as he was.
Now, you know, we can all talk anecdotally about being afraid of the dark, and as you said, you know, you leave your room, you're going to kind of rush past the dark area to go upstairs. But should we genuinely feel fear, demons and demonic activity? Is that something we should really be concerned with?
I guess, yeah, like you said, it really depends on who you are. For me, I'm not going to mess with it. I remember when I was a kid, I read the Satanic Bible. I messed around with the Ouija board, things like that. And probably out of pure defiance or just to see what you can kind of get away with. But I don't know. Is there anything to be gained by dipping your toe in that water? That's the way I look at it.
So what you're saying then is, why risk it? Why mess around with something you don't understand?
I liken it to? I liken it to venomous snakes. I love snakes. I grew up loving snakes. I still do. And I have friends of mine who keep venomous snakes. And they're some of the most beautiful creatures on the planet. They're absolutely gorgeous. And some of them can stop your heart inside of an hour. Me, I love to look at them. I love to read about them. But I'm not going to keep them. For the people that do, I guess I can kind of see the allure that you're tempting fate. In some cases, it's just for the adrenaline rush. Mm-hmm. And you can be as careful as you want to be, but you're still dealing with something that's not entirely within your control. So if you play in that world with venomous snakes, there's a very good chance that somewhere along the line, no matter how careful you are, something's going to bite you and your life is just never going to be the same. So I kind of see it in that same way.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people that takes those kind of risks. I'll take risks in the business world. I'll take those kinds of risks all day long. But when it comes to things like jumping out of airplanes, playing with poisonous snakes, or asking a demon to come say hello through a Ouija board, I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to do those things.
Right, and it's interesting because this is not something I really gave much thought until like a couple of years ago, and I never really saw myself as a superstitious is not the word, but I didn't really think I was that affected, I guess, by these kind of thoughts. Even thinking about it, to be honest with you, it just gets heavy sometimes.
Yeah, you know, there's a constant discussion and throughout all cultures and all of history, this good versus evil thing. It's the constant struggle. It's the paradigm that we've really all grown up in. Some of that is taught to us through religious practices, but some of it is just taught to us through culture. Is this discussion of demons part of that? Are demons the evil that's versus good here that we're talking about?
I suppose so. I mean, in most cultures, like you said, they're depicted as these malevolent beings. So,
yeah.
If their sole purpose is to do evil, I mean, that's kind of what they're there for. It's interesting that if you look at demons, and again, if you're looking at it just in terms of pop culture, I think it's kind of interesting to see how they've evolved. So, again, you have in books like the Screwtape Letters from C.S. Lewis. You know, these are just kind of simple-minded single-minded, and all they want to do is kind of just wreak havoc and do bad things. Now you see in TV and movies, you have characters like Hellboy or Spawn or Ghost Rider,
right,
that are either, you know, full demon or at least part demon. And these characters have both good and bad in them, the whole idea of the anti-hero. And sometimes they're very likable because of that struggle. So at least in culture, it's interesting to see how they've changed.
It is interesting. And another thing that's interesting, I'm not sure you have an opinion or any experience with this, but again, as somebody who was involved in a paranormal reality show for a lot of years, I've noticed that many of these other paranormal reality shows are going to the demonic possession exorcism, you know, episodes for ratings and excitement, I guess. Do you think that's dangerous? And do you think it maybe downplays the real threats that these types of things, if they're genuine, propose?
I guess it depends on the outcome, right? Have you seen the film The Devil and Father Amorth?
I have. I've watched that. Mm-hmm. He just passed away recently, didn't he?
Yeah, not too long ago. But I thought that was interesting, and I think his take is showing that kind of stuff is useful in that it opens your eyes to what is possible for people who either don't believe in it or don't think it's real. That film contains a lengthy, what is supposedly a true exorcism.
That's right.
And in the film, I mean, honestly, the film did not change my mind either way. It didn't really make me believe that it was real or was not real. It was much tamer than what you see in Hollywood or maybe even in some of the shows you're talking about.
Right.
But I think it's interesting to have the conversation. So is it a danger? Yes, I think probably if it's glamorizing it, or I'm not saying if it's dangerous, but if it's glamorizing it or if it's, I don't know.
Well, I have a lot of skepticism as to any of the ones that I've seen on television, and that film aside, I'm talking about these weekly programs that a bunch of people go to check out a haunted house, and then they stumble upon a demon and they have to do an exorcism. I haven't seen anything in those that makes me think any of that is genuine. So I get concerned that they're setting an example for these amateur ghost hunters to get involved in something that if they actually come into contact with something that is legitimate, that is actually a demonic possession, they could get themselves, if not physically hurt, spiritually hurt.
Yeah, it's... I'll be curious to see when it happens. But yeah, I mean, there's so many things in this world that we cannot explain. I mean, I'm very much open to the idea that there could be a whole world that's beyond our touch that we just have no understanding of. So, like you said, if that is true and you do unlock something, then what happens next?
We're talking tonight with Bill Donahue. He is the author of a new book that we've been talking about tonight and we'll continue talking about. It's called Burn Beautiful Soul. He has other books to his credit. His website is wjdonahue.com. Bill, is that the best place for people to go to get information about the books and your work?
That's perfect.
You know, when I was looking at the website earlier, I mistakenly, not mistakenly, but just kind of was talking, you know, saying your name and stuff. And I kept saying Phil Donahue. I bet you get that a lot.
You know, it's funny. That was like the first insult that I got as a kid. I remember just being a little kid in Catholic school and someone kid called me Phil Donahue and being so upset.
Oh, that's funny. So if demons are here, if they actually are in this world, what is their purpose, do you think? And, you know, these are in some ways theology questions, but, you know, based on what your experience has been and maybe even how you've portrayed them in the book, what do you think they're here for?
Well, if we believe what demonologists say, and then we believe what a lot of the texts say, demons are here to cause trouble and to separate us from God, if we believe that's part of their mandate. They're not here to do anything good. In terms of what I wanted to convey with the book, again, partly I wanted to make a character that I wasn't so terrified of, a demon that, and this goes to what we see in some degrees of pop culture, but demons that have a little bit more depth to them, and that aren't maybe entirely bad, that can. So my character, he's Basil. He's not here to help people, but he in some ways helps people who are lost in some way.
When you hear of stories of, and I'm sure you had to do a lot of research as you were writing the book, but you hear some of these reports of demonic activity. Do you think that a large percentage of these anecdotal stories that are passed around, and maybe it's even from the person who experienced it, do you ever get concerned that this is a misinterpretation of maybe something that's mental or physically at play in a person's life?
I do, actually. I had a conversation recently with someone who had some significant experiences, and it was both her and her husband, and it was one of the situations where it actually wound up driving them out of the house. And part of me, that's the thing. It's like, what do you believe? You want to take the person at their word and hope that they are okay mentally, but that's something that it's definitely worth asking. Because, I mean, these are not experiences that everyone has. And I think that's the question. It's like, where, if it is real, then what determines that hand? How did that happen? How did this happen to me? That's the first question that anyone asks when something bad happens.
Yeah.
Why? So why did that happen to that specific person? So, yeah, I think that's, for a lot of people, when they hear about these things, they say, well, that's not true. That can't be true. That's a lie. That person has mental issues. It's certainly worth asking, but how? I mean, I'm not a doctor. I can't diagnose the person.
Right.
But it's a question worth asking for sure.
It is a question worth asking. One of the things that has concerned me, and I don't know if you found the same experience, but it seems as though, and this might be changing, I think attitudes might be changing a little bit here, but it seems as though particularly the Catholic Church is a little hesitant to get involved with somebody who might go to them for help with something like this. They seem to have a lot of barriers to that, and I can understand them wanting to be careful about how they employ this type of thing, or even, you know, discuss it. However, if someone's calling, you know, asking for help, regardless of what the cause of the problem is, it seems like, you know, they should want to get involved to help them figure out what that problem is. If it's demonic, they're the ones that have to deal with it. If it's something else, they might be able to help point the victim to the right resources.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. I think in some cases, I mean, it's almost like you can't deny that something is clearly wrong, and it's something, unless the human brain is so powerful that it can manufacture all these crazy things that can happen. I mean, clearly something is wrong. In some cases, it may be just the fact that you know, the person is crying out, that it needs help in some way, shape, or form. It has, yeah, that this person has some sort of mental issue. But some of these things, if you believe, what has happened, what they've done, what they've said, it's almost impossible not to think that something is clearly wrong.
Some people would say that that demonic entities will prey on people that are, addicts in some fashion, or maybe destitute, or even some that are, in fact, mentally ill in some fashion. Have you found that in your experience to be true, or at least to be a valid theory?
One of the things I thought was interesting is, again, treating this as a disease, like addiction or something like that, but a spiritual disease. What I've heard from some theories is that demons kind of find someone who has some kind of, we'll say, an underlying condition, whether it's a mental addiction or something like that, and almost kind of hide behind that and kind of uses that in order to kind of get inside and to kind of be masked by what else is going on.
And it's a vulnerability. It's like a chink in the armor of your of your being, and they use that weakness as a way to either influence or even in some fashion. I don't use the word possess as in possession, but to possess you. It's a bit scary. It's a bit concerning. It's a bit nebulous because we can't identify this per se, but it's enough to fuel nightmares, Bill.
Absolutely. And this may be a stretch, but what I find interesting is if you look at monsters in the world, we've had monsters throughout our history, but now we kind of have names for all of them, things like great white sharks and grizzly bears and anacondas and stuff like that, mm-hmm. things that were once monsters, but kind of science has classified them, they understand them, things like that. Even something like COVID-19, which is something that we can't see with the naked eye, but with the right tools we can. And again, this may be a stretch, but maybe we just don't have the right tools to see these kind of entities.
And there's also theories that, and you kind of touched upon this just a moment ago when you said maybe, and I think you were being a bit facetious, but I think you also know there might, that people do consider this as a possibility, that the human brain might be so powerful and maybe parts of it that we don't understand and we certainly don't control consciously that could be creating or projecting some of this activity in a way. And poltergeist activity is a perfect example of that. Do you see any credibility in the idea that maybe what we call demonic activity might actually be coming from within ourselves?
I do. I think that's the big question. Like I said, I really find this stuff so interesting, and I sometimes have to kind of work hard to step away from it, whether it's listening to happy music or watching something silly on TV like Friends or reading YA fiction or something like that to kind of make sure that I'm out of that headspace. I'm not sure if you run into that because you touch on a lot of these different things that take you to all strange parts of existence. So I'm not sure if you could do stuff like that to kind of decompress from the weird stuff that you interact with and have seen. But I think it's important to kind of keep your mind right.
Bill, our parallels continue to mount up. Friends is my go-to show when I need to lighten things up. I watch Friends and I find myself laughing hysterically. And yep. I think I know every line in every episode pretty much. We've got a couple questions lined up here in our chat room, and I want to ask them for our chatters before we continue on here. One of the questions, we kind of touched on this, but Android asks, have you found that there are some religions that won't help people with demonic problems? Apparently, Android has seen this reported on some eyewitness shows.
You touched on kind of the high bar for like Catholics for that matter.
Right.
Some people just in some cases, it takes the church a lot to really get behind that. I've heard from I don't want to pick on any religions or anything like that, but I have heard about some religions that are not very permissive, I guess we'll say, or really just exactly what Android is saying. But again, I don't want to pick on anyone religion-wise. But I have seen things like that, but I do think it is a pretty high bar.
One of the things that has often been discussed, too, as it relates to this, is that, this increase in what we're seeing as reported demonic possessions, whether it's an individual possessed or a home possessed,
A lot of people will say, well, that's the Catholic Church promoting that because they want more people coming to church and being afraid of these things. That's a legitimate argument. I can see why someone might think that or propose that idea. However, I do still think that, and again, particularly the Catholic Church, and I'm Catholic, so you know I feel okay talking about this stuff in this fashion. They seem very, very hesitant to not just identify that as what a problem might be, but even hear someone talk about it. And maybe that's just a local thing. I don't know.
It is an interesting line that, I grew up in a Catholic family too, but it is an interesting line that that the church walks, because like I said, you're talking about these things that basically the evil is trying to break down the door, so to speak. But when it happens, or when it allegedly happens, then it becomes like, well, let's take a step back here and make sure that's, you know, really, 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 really make sure that's what it is.
I mean, it seems like if the Catholic Church wanted more people showing up for church on Sunday, they would be instilling the fear of demons all over the place. But that's certainly not happening, and I'm glad it's not. I just it seems like if that was their objective, that's what they would be doing. Another question here from our chat room, or is it? What are your thoughts on Aleister Crowley and are his demons still around?
He's a fascinating character, and I probably have not read as widely as I should have. But the whole theory on demons is that they can't be destroyed. So if we're talking about the actual kind of spiritual demons, if they once were, they always will be.
Is it dangerous to dabble with this? I mean, we talked about somebody, you know, taking on risks by playing with a Ouija board or you know, tempting demonic activity, whatever happens. But in general, you and I are just having a conversation about this. You wrote a book where this is a central theme. Do you think that's dangerous, any of this?
So with this book, I tried to steer away from the things that I read about, and the character that I wanted to make. There's actually a lot of humor in the book, which is probably me trying to kind of make this more palatable, or make a character that I wasn't quite scared of, or maybe just something like that. But as I said to you earlier, I don't invoke things or invite things or put myself in a position where I think I'm going to be vulnerable. I think it depends on what you believe is true. I'm not going to go out of my way to poke something in the eye. I've heard some people say that even talking about this kind of stuff is
right,
not dangerous, but a vulnerability.
Right.
But I try to surround myself with positivity, and not that I'm a light worker or anything like that, but I try to surround myself with positivity and light otherwise. So I'll take a break from this kind of heavy stuff when I think I need to.
There was a period, I think it actually happened a couple of times, right after the film The Exorcist was released and became very successful. And then again, I think it was in the 80s, mid-80s, the Satanic Panic?
Yep.
And it was a period where, you know, American society particularly became very, very concerned about Satan worshipers and demonic activity, and you know we had groups of kids that would call themselves Satan worshipers, and they would be, you know, dressed goth, and there was a whole, you know, subculture going on related to this stuff. Do you know if that subculture exists with the same vibrancy as it did back then? Is it bigger? Is it smaller? Is it dangerous? Do we have to worry about pets being sacrificed in our neighborhoods? Any information on that?
In America, it seems like that really has died down. We have bigger problems to deal with now. If you go to like Scandinavia and stuff like that, where the whole like black metal scene is still really big, I think there's been cases where people involved in that scene have committed murders, burned down churches, done not very nice things at all. So in that sense, I think, you know, the black metal scene is very much alive. Back when they still had tours and stuff like that, you'd still see them popping up in America and stuff like that. But, to see like metal bands and stuff now, it doesn't seem to have any of that same stuff going on, and it's rare to even see someone with long hair these days.
Yeah. we've seen this particular topic addressed in pop culture. You mentioned a few what we would call heroes, anti-heroes, that are of demonic origin that have made pop culture scene recently and become somewhat popular. How has it changed over the course of the years? I mean, those earlier, the black and white horror films that I love that touch on this demonic idea, portrayed in a very, what we would consider, I guess, to be a religious way, you know, the religious definition of all this stuff. How has it changed over the course of the years? What are we looking at now?
It's interesting. It seems like we really can't escape the religious aspect of things as it relates to demons. That goes back to one of your earlier questions. But what I find most interesting about how demons are portrayed is that we're seeing a lot more humor involved.
Yeah.
And this goes back to maybe just making light of the things that we're afraid of. But I think to characters like the Satan character in South Park.
I was just going to mention that one. Yes.
Yeah. So pretty much all the characters from the Bruce Campbell films, like Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, This is the End, which is that movie about the rapture and hell on earth. Dogma was a big one. Mm-hmm. I think remember that film.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There was the Golgothan, who was like the poop demon, which I thought was actually really cleverly done. But just a lot more things where you're almost kind of poking it in the eye.
We have been treated to a lot of, well, maybe not a lot, but some blockbuster films that talk about this stuff. And I mentioned The Exorcist. Rosemary's Baby is another one that you know has this component in as well. You just mentioned some others. Did you mention your favorites, or do you have others that you really like that you think address this in not just a meaningful way, but in an entertaining way?
In terms of films or books or both?
Let's talk about both.
Okay. I just read Rosemary's Baby last year. It was a beautiful book, really well done. One of the books that I thought was most interesting, and it was more on the humor end of things, it was Practical Demon Keeping from Christopher Moore. He writes across genres, including horror, but he does a good job of kind of making light of that. One of the most interesting books I read just recently is called Ring Shout, RingShout. And it has to do with the Ku Klux Klan and essentially suggesting that there was kind of a demonic infiltration into that organization, and that's what made them do the really terrible things that they did. Probably the best book that I've read recently about this stuff is it's called The Summer That Melted Everything from a woman named Tiffany McDaniel. And it's one of those books where you're not really sure whether it's actually a demon or not, but it's just really well done.
You mentioned organizations. Did you get any depth into the idea that maybe the Nazis had some type of satanic worship or any kind of demonic aspirations? It's often said that Heinrich Himmler himself was very much into occult ideas and looking for those type of spiritual connections. Do you ever find anything out about that during your research?
That's absolutely just a fascinating aspect of everything, and you've seen so much of that covered, even in things like Hellboy, is essentially when they open the portal and
right.
try to kind of unleash the old ones and stuff like that. I think that's absolutely fascinating. My wife actually, she has kind of a fascination with that kind of stuff, with kind of all the horrible things that happened in World War II and with the concentration camps and everything.
Yeah.
Just awful, terrible things. It wouldn't surprise me to see, I think, kind of evil attracts evil, or if evil feeds off evil. So that wouldn't surprise me at all if that actually really happened the way it did.
One of our listener questions here in our chat room is about shadow people and the Hat Man. These are paranormal phenomena that we've talked about on the program specifically, and had entire shows dedicated to each of those topics. Some people think there's a demonic connection. Did you come across any of that in researching the book, and what are your thoughts on it, if you have?
I don't have too many strong thoughts on those. I mean, is essentially, are these, do the Shadow Men, do they typically do they cause a lot of like tremendous harm and things like that, or is
well,
it something that's
what you know? I've seen shadow people, I'll call them, in some of our paranormal investigations. I've actually encountered these things, and they're just and they seem very benign. They seem to be onlookers more than anything else. But the Hat Man stories that we've gotten, and I've never had this experience, but the Hat Man has a far more nefarious presence, and it tends to show up in your bedroom when you're asleep, standing at the end of your bed. It's always described the same way. It looks like they're wearing some kind of formal hat. And if you get any more glimpse of that, it's usually a shadow type. You know, you see a silhouette, but sometimes you'll see like formal wear, like it's wearing a tux kind of thing. And it comes with a real sense of foreboding. So those are the stories that I've heard regarding the Hat Man. And there's actually a couple of good documentaries on, I think I saw one on Amazon Prime recently about the Hat Man that tells this story pretty well. But they seem to have the more sinister presence.
I just heard a story about that from someone who claimed to has seen a Hat Man. She didn't refer to it as a Hat Man per se, but this is someone or something that made its presence known, gave its name, made an offer, which she declined, and things got really bad after that.
Oh, wow.
I was actually, it was a chilling story, and it's one of those stories where I kind of had to stop thinking about it because it was I was losing sleep over it.
Is this someone that you knew or someone that you've met along the way?
Someone I met along the way.
Wow.
It's crazy stuff. It's just one of those things where, like I said, how does, if it really does happen, how does it happen? Why does it happen? Why you? Why me?
Right. Yeah. What's happening in your life that you're not aware of, maybe, that is creating this opportunity for that entity? So back to the book, Burn Beautiful Soul. You said it was released just a couple weeks ago. It hasn't been out long. How long did it take you to write it? And obviously these things have kind of been building in you for a long time, you know, with your interest in the paranormal, your interest in horror movies, and your interest in demonic topics. So you brought it all together, and talk about the process of writing it.
Sure. It's actually, I had the idea probably first around 15 years ago, and when I first thought of it, it was kind of almost a joke. I imagined a demon working in an office, wearing a short sleeve white shirt and like a bolo tie, fixing copy machines, and that idea just stayed with me. But I never really knew what the story was. Mm-hmm. So my wife and I, we were on vacation in New Hampshire, and just every morning I would get up and over the course of a week I just fleshed out the story, and realized that it wasn't humor. I mean, there's humor in the book, but I realized it wasn't a comedy piece. It was something much, much different than that. So that was in May 2015, and I finished the first draft in October 2017.
Yeah, it's quite a process. What do you hope people, after they read this book, walk away with? Is it purely, do you want them just entertained, or are you hoping they get a bit of a message out of it as well?
I would hope that I think there's a lot of, this is going to sound really cheesy, it's kind of a book about second chances, and if you're anything like me, you've gone through things in your life that made you kind of question who you are and why you did things that you did. So to me, it's a book about second chances, and so yeah, he's a demon. Basil is a demon, but he experiences humor, he experiences romance, tedium, all that kind of stuff that make up the human experience. So I mean, hopefully it's people will be entertained by it, but hopefully there is something more that they'll come away with.
Now you've got some other books listed here on your website: Too Much Poison, Filthy Beast, Brain Cradle. Tell us about these as well.
Sure. So Brain Cradle was the first. That one's more straight horror. Filthy Beast came next. That's horror too. But then that's kind of when I started reading things like John Updike and John Irving and things like that that are a little bit more real world problems that that can turn into horrors. And Too Much Poison is I say that's my nervous breakdown book.
Nervous
so it's
breakdown.
A little bit of everything.
Do you say that in the sense that it was something you were going through in your life at the time, or are you saying the book itself is kind of like a nervous breakdown?
It was things going on in my life. You know, my marriage was not going well. My career kind of tanked, and there's some other things going on in my life that that I hadn't really dealt with. So that was the result of a lot of those things coming together.
And that was the outlet for it. Boy, something about art, something about, and I know that, you know, I've gone through tough times as well as we all have, and I find my outlet for that is writing music. You know, it's something about creating art is therapeutic when you're going through a tough time. So with Burn Beautiful Soul, the title itself is a bit curious. How'd you come up with the title?
So Basil, the main character, he's actually a poet as well. And so the book, it's funny, I've heard some authors say that they didn't really know what the book was about until they heard people tell them. I went through something similar, but it's after reading the first draft, I didn't realize quite how Catholic of a book it was, meaning my Catholic upbringing probably formed it more than I expected it to. So when I finished going through it, it really does hit on a lot of the themes that I was exposed to as a kid going to Catholic school. I think it diverges wildly from what we're taught about heaven and hell and about who ends up where. But I think the warnings about sin and punishment and things like that are maybe a little more front and center. So it's essentially about, you know, a beautiful soul is to me is someone who is a good person. His heart has maybe made some mistakes. And the burn part is that even though you may be a good person because you've done certain things or maybe you haven't said the right things or whatever, then you're going to burn for all eternity.
The book is available. We mentioned your website. You've got them all listed there. Where else can people find Burn Beautiful Soul?
So my website is a good place to start. Of course, you can find it on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, the websites of you know, independent bookstores. And for the folks that are still going into bookstores, hopefully you can find it on the shelves there too.
And I think now, Bill, we both have to retire and go watch some Friends to get this heavy monkey off our backs that we just put there in this conversation. But no, seriously, good luck with the book. I appreciate you being on the program tonight. It was a fascinating chat. Look forward to having you back on.
JB, I really appreciate the time.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by JV Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.